You are listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, hey, what is happening,
y'all? What's good,
y'all?
My name is
Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
We are waiting on reparations.
And waiting on some COVID test results, because that'll marry on us, no joke, man.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking before we started recording. Wait, so you think you might got the Rona?
I might. So baby was having a fever of like 102 on Saturday. Took him to the hospital. They just gave him Tylenol, so that's going to be fucking fun to pay a $500 emergency room bill for Tylenol. But, got him tested for the Rona, just in case. And we're still waiting to get those results back. But since then, I have also started to not feel very well. So we will see.
Is it comparable to the first time that you got it?
Well, the first time I got it, I was asymptomatic. I think what ended up actually being a panic attack, but to me registered as chest pains at the time. Mm. Other than that, was totally fine. And I also, throughout pregnancy, et cetera, have been sick multiple times this year that weren't COVID. Like, you know, got tested, everything was fine. So I might just have a compromised immune system from stress and other factors. And so maybe it's not that, but given the explosion in cases that we have seen in the last 2 weeks, I think over 1 million cases reported on one day of this last week, might have been yesterday, I wouldn't be shocked. It feels like every single person, like, I've had multiple, like, potential exposures, like, over the last 2 weeks.
Well, we both have a mutual friend of the show who right now is suffering from it. And, I guess it's all anecdotal, but it's like, you know, when the initial pandemic hit, it's like there was definitely people who I knew who were affected by it. And then when Delta hit, it's like, okay, more people that I know are affected by it. And now with the new Omarion strain, oh shit. Like everybody who I know has got COVID. Things in Savannah are starting to shut down again. You know what I mean? Everybody's canceling parties and live events and stuff that they had going on. So it definitely is no joke. But since you are not feeling well, shit, let's keep it moving, right?
Let's keep it moving. We got lots of cheery, other cheery topics to discuss this week.
Speaking of which, happy Insurrection Day, everybody.
The anniversary. Yes. So we generally record on like early in the week. So I don't even think we got the chance, other than I think last year we had an episode the week after the insurrection, the attempted coup. We talked a little bit about the rise of white right-wing fascism. But this is our first time to really reflect deeply on the other incarnations of fascism in the United States, particularly as they have bloomed over the last year in the aftermath of the insurrection. And we're actually speaking with somebody today who is an expert on right-wing extremism and anti-fascist organizing, from what I understand.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with Christopher Goldsmith today, and he's a really cool guy, really interesting cat. He's a ex-army vet. And when he got out, he started doing veterans work and noticing that, some of his brothers in arms were kind of susceptible to, you know, recruitment by right-wing extremist groups. And that started the work that he started doing, infiltrating some of those organizations, reporting them, actually actively sabotaging their plans and movements and stuff like that. So we're going to be chatting with him. Just about his thoughts on, you know, the year after January 6th, some of the things that right-wing extremist groups have been up to, and just where he thinks things are heading. So that's going to be a really dope conversation. But before we get into that, we're just going to recap some of our thoughts on January 6th and talk about some of those same things. We will be back with that after the jump. All right, we are back. So, I don't think anybody who's listened to the show has been under a rock. Most people know what the events of January 6, 2021, were. But if you don't know, like, the full details of stuff, or even if you want to, like, get, like, a full sense of the picture, a full scale of what went down, I suggest that everybody check out the Southern Poverty Law Center they have a extremely dope timeline of all of the events. And I mean, I'm talking about dating back before George Floyd's murder, but they kind of go through the rundown of all of the entire year to show you all of the little events nationwide that were leading up to what eventually took place on January 6th. But just to kick it off for you, I'm going to read this little opening of how they open up that timeline. So on January 6, 2021, a right-wing mob stormed the U.S. Capitol at the urging of President Donald J. Trump in an attempt to prevent the certification of the presidential election results. But the attack didn't come from nowhere. It was the culmination of a year of increasingly radical activity by a slew of extremists around the country. They mobilized against racial justice, COVID-19 prevention measures, and voting rights for all Americans, and they were goaded on by the president and other politicians on the right.
So, similar to the aftermath of the George Floyd murder, there was almost universal condemnation of the riot. But just like with Floyd, it only took a few weeks before Republican politicians began to rationalize and justify it. As the congressional investigation into the event wraps up now, more and more evidence has come out about the direct involvement of Trump, his staff, and administration, as well as various right-wing media figures. You know, there's text messages that came out between talking heads at Fox News and Trump's children trying to dissuade Trump from egging on the rioters that were, you know, ultimately ignored, etc.
They've been finding, like, all sorts of hidden memos and drafts and PowerPoint presentations to show exactly like how, like, I mean, the main thing is like in real time, like experiencing it, it seemed ridiculous, you know, and it seemed like hee hee ha ha, oh, they're sore losers, oh, this is funny, oh, they're being ridiculous. But in the, you know, the time since, it's like we found out how calculated and deliberate this entire thing was. And not only that, but also how much all of these right-wing politicians did not believe a word of what they were saying. Like, none of them believe that that Donald Trump really won the election. None of them believe it, but they're saying it anyway. So a lot of that stuff has been exposed and is coming out. And I mean, one way or another, this committee is going to end because, you know, the Republicans are most likely going to win back the House. And when they do, they're probably going to shut this shit down the next day if it's still going on. So,
and this is in part why I, you know, in my life of elected service, whatever, am very resistant to the committeeization of everything. Of like, oh, let's assign that to a committee. Let's have a committee investigate that. You know, study for reparations. Oh, let's assign that to a committee. You know, January 6th, let's have a committee look into that. Because it's just where they send stuff to die. Like that, a year later, like none of the folks that were encouraging this insurrection have been expelled from Congress or even censured in a major way. None of them have, to my understanding, been stripped of their committees or anything like that, let alone any sort of legal action taken against them for, you know, treason, etc. They just assigned it to committee. And yes, we've, you know, discovered a lot of harrowing details about it through the course of this investigation. But like you said, Republicans probably gonna take back the House. Nothing's gonna happen. It's shocking to the degree to which Republicans have continued to push the big lie. You know, in Cobb County this week, there is Cobb County Republican Party is hosting like a vigil for the J6 Patriots that, you know, are being persecuted, et cetera, et cetera. Folks have just become ever more emboldened since then because there were really no consequences for...
None. I mean, you give a motherfucker an inch, they're going to take a mile or a yard or whatever the saying is. But, I mean, it really is like that. Paul Gosar is still there. He's still going to white supremacist rallies and then going to the House. Like, you know what I'm saying? He's still going back and forth. Like, it's... I don't think that... I don't know. I don't think that it's sunk in how, like, the madness of that situation. I don't think it's really stuck. to landing. As much as, you know, libs and mainstream media, they report on it ad nausea. So it's not like it's not being reporting, but for whatever reason, from like a public standpoint, that shit didn't stick the way that it did. And, you know, again, speaking in cliches, but it's like, obviously, if that was like a Black Lives Matter protest, if that was a bunch of Muslim people, if that, like, we, you know, you can go down the list of like what group, what demographic that group could have been made of that would make us still be talking about it today like it was the traumatizing, national traumatizing event that it was, you know what I'm saying? But it's like whenever right-wingers do shit, shit doesn't, I don't know why, but well, shit just doesn't seem to stick because, like, it seems like...
I think this is emblematic of, like, America writ large in that, you know, oftentimes the folks pulling the strings and inciting the terror get away or, you know, just for, or, you know, who are complicit in the crimes but are like bigwigs of some fashion get away with shit. And then the foot soldiers are the ones that get popped. Because there have been some pretty serious consequences for a number of the people who physically stormed the Capitol, even if there haven't been for the folks that whooped them into a frenzy. Just like how, during the housing crisis of 2008, you best believe the folks, the men that were beating their wives because they were losing their houses, and the folks that were turned into prostitution or whatever because they lost their jobs, and the kids that, you know, started selling weed because their parents' whole college fund for them got, you know, disappeared overnight. You best believe all those people went to jail. You best believe all those people went to jail. But the Wall Street motherfuckers did not.
Yeah.
Because the people at the top skate by and they're totally fine no matter what sorts of calamities they engineer. It's the people that are doing the footwork that are that is the result of that engineered calamity that are the people that go to jail.
I mean, I agree. I like, you're 100% correct. But I mean, still there's a disparity though. It's like, I think that, like, if I hear of somebody who was, you know, participated in the Gen 6 thing, oh, this person got 2 years, or oh, this person got like 5 years or something like that. To me, that sounds like, wow, that's like serious consequences. But I'm saying that as like somebody who generally is a, you know, rule of principle, doesn't really like want motherfuckers going to jail like that. You know what I mean? But we damn sure know that they would be handing out 5 and 10 year sentences like Skittles if this was a Black Lives Matter protest.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like none of that would matter. And the thing is, the thing that kills me about like people on the left is like we're using all of these like qualifiers as to why we shouldn't look down on this situation, or why, you know what I mean, we shouldn't have as big of a hysteria as like mainstream media or like mainstream establishment Democrats are having on it. We shouldn't be that freaked out about the situation because, oh man, they're just gonna, if they crack down on this, then think about when they're in power, they're gonna crack down on left-wing activism and left-wing protests and stuff like that. And it's like, what planet are motherfuckers living on? They're gonna do that anyway.
Well,
and they've
been
already
doing that.
Do.
That is why, yeah, that's like, why, like, the police exist.
Yeah, like there's no like reality that's gonna happen where we go through another period of there being like, you know, heavy protests on the left, or heavy protests that's coming from the left. There's no world where we're gonna be in that situation, and Republicans or conservatives in charge are gonna say, "Man, you know what? We were gonna crack down on them, but they didn't crack down on the Jan 6 guys, so it's cool." Like, what?
Yeah. This is getting...
That's not going to be the case.
Nah. Although, you know what's really interesting? Like, I generally try to avoid amplifying horseshoe theory because I do think it is ultimately a reactionary, like, way to discredit the left at times. But the idea that, like, you know, the far right and the far left, like, sort of meet in the middle in some ways, kind of like if politics were a horseshoe. However, something that I do find really interesting is the way that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and folks like that have been calling for justice for the J6 rioters that are being unfairly treated in prison. And like, look at these horrible conditions in prison. Where it's like, yo, we've been trying to tell you that for so long. Like, yes, comrade, but Marjorie Taylor Greene. Like,
well, see,
yes.
That's the thing is like, it's all disingenuous and it's all on purpose and it's all deliberate.
Oh no, I'm absolutely playing. I'm playing, but it's just really. It's,
oh no, I know you're playing, but I mean, yeah. there's mad people. There's mad people who don't. Who think that unironically, you know what I mean? Who like aren't playing or like, and it's just, it's totally weird. Like when Marjorie Taylor Greene starts talking like she's fucking MLK about prison conditions and stuff like that in the context of January 6th people, she's doing that on purpose. You know what I mean? Like she's purposely co-opting like language like that about like, oh, prison conditions and the prison system. Like they're trolling, you know what I'm saying? Like they're trying to be like wink wink funny, like ha ha ha, we're using their stuff. So you know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't like, for me, I don't necessarily know whether I'm in the mindset of a throw the hammer at them as an example to their friends or whatever, but I mean, when you're essentially telling motherfuckers that feel entitled to shit already that it's good. Not only that it's good, but like sit tight until y'all boys get back. That's not. It's like none of this stuff is good, and I'm not talking about the usual good, like when you like watch the news and shit, and you're like, oh, that's bad. I mean, like this shit. This is like bad. Like where this shit is heading is it's January 6th was just a dry run. It was just practice. It was dress rehearsal. You know what I mean? And it's like in the year that has passed since, you know, laws have been changed to take away people's voting rights. Things have been implemented to make it harder and more difficult for people to vote. So I don't know. I see them making this play for their minority rule thing, and you know, I mean, they're not slowing down with it at all. But yeah, it's pretty shitty stuff.
Do you? I was gonna say, do you recall like your thoughts or feelings that day, January 6th, 2021?
Yeah, I mean, I remember it was daytime and shit and. I don't know if you were home.
I think I may have been. Where would I have been? It's a pandemic.
Oh yeah, true. But yeah, no, I like for me it was kind of like like the O.J. Simpson running away in the white Bronco, or like even like Christopher Goldsmith, he was saying like for him it was. Like the similar feeling to 9/11, not like the gravity of the situation, not comparing them in that sense, but just comparing the like the weight of it. You know what I'm saying? Like I remember, you know, there's certain things that have happened in life throughout life where it's like it happens that day and you remember like that day. You remember where you were when you saw it going down. You know what I mean? Like, you remember how, like, the room smelled. Like, it was one of those situations for me where I'm watching it on TV and not knowing how it was going to play out. Me just completely thinking that the cops were just going to start bucking people at some point and expecting it. You know what I mean? So I was just, like, sitting there watching it like, man, I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life. You know?
Yeah, like, for sure. Definitely. It felt very momentous. It felt like a watershed moment because it was so unclear what was going to happen next. Like, are they going to start storming capitals all over the nation? That was the day I got sworn into my second term. And like, I was like furiously texting the city manager, like, is it safe? People like making fun of me, like, oh, it's fine. It's like, yeah, bitch, you ain't never got no lynching threats, ma'am. Like, of course you're not worried. I'm not trying to stand outside City Hall, get my brains blown out by a sniper on the parking deck. Like, just so much uncertainty of what the larger implications were for it in that moment of like, yeah, where is this going?
Yeah.
Whew, yeah.
And it could have got bad. I mean, it could have got so, so bad. I think I heard something about a report that came out that said that there actually was like a, like, you know, damn near like special forces hostage rescue sort of like team on standby while all the shit was going down. So the question was like, oh, how come they didn't go into action? Why were they implemented? And it was like, no, these dudes don't, like, these dudes go to clear a building and nobody's standing up when they're done. You know what I'm saying? So it was kind of, they were on standby pretty much waiting, like, if that door, you know, the door where Ashley Babbitt got shot. Yeah. But they're pretty much standing by, like, waiting to see if that door was going to get breached. And if that shit had gotten breached, there would have been some, like, operators just clearing out the clearing out the Capitol. And some of these Gravy SEAL guys would have ran into, like, the real deal shit that they like to pretend to be. You know what I mean? And then that would have created a fuck ton of martyrs. And then we'd be sitting, you know, it would be sitting in a completely different, I'd argue, even worse dynamic with the situation than we are right now. But it's like if the next election comes around and they make another play at this sort of thing and they do it in a more organized sense, I mean, it's like kind of like backing the rest of the country into a corner to where you either sit back and let them do it or you confront them on it.
Yeah, period.
You know. Let's get into some of these statistics and stuff like that from last year and the year before it. So, in the U.S., the number of hate crimes targeting black people jumped nearly 40%, and the number of hate crimes targeting Asian people rose by 70% in 2020. The actual number of reported incidents targeting Asian people last year, it's relatively small with 274 crimes compared to the incidents targeting black people, but still, it's a 70% increase nonetheless. In 2020, there were 2,755 reported incidents targeting blacks and black Africans and people living in the U.S.
Man.
Overall, in the United States, hate crimes rose by 6%, according to the FBI.
And what I really I hate violence in all of its forms, except for, like, punching Nazis. However, like, I hate that the conversation around hate crimes devolved into, like, interracial, like, competition for, like, who should be protected under the law. Just various things. Various things, like, black folks saying, like, oh, like, in the face of things like the Atlanta spa shootings, like, well, you know, we didn't see y'all saying Black Lives Matter last summer. Why should we?
Yeah.
It's like, no, we should band together. First of all, like, I don't think hate crimes laws are particularly the best way to deal with these situations. I'm always for, like, actual preventative measures, like de-radicalizing folks through education, etc. But, like, the fact that it turned into this pissing contest of, like, whose lives are in danger more, like, bruh, why don't we all band together and get shit for all of us? Like, everybody, please chill.
Chill.
I love all of y'all. I love my Asian brothers and sisters. I love my black people, you know, my African immigrants. All y'all, we're all cool, man. Let's all get it.
And we're all going through it together too. So, you know, like, it would behoove us to band together and strengthen numbers and all that jazz. The agency, the FBI, considers criminal incidents to be hate crimes if they are motivated by bias towards race, ethnicity, ancestry, religion, sexual orientation, disability, gender, and gender identity. There were 7,759 criminal incidents reported and 10,532 related offenses that were considered hate crimes last year by the FBI.
The majority of hate crimes, more than 53%, involved intimidation of victims, while nearly 46% were either simple or aggravated assaults. A total of 22 murders were reported as hate crimes, which is probably an undercount, given, like, the weakness of our hate crimes reporting laws and mechanisms. But these statistics...
That's what I just said.
I started going off but then not even reading the thing. There are more than 18,000 agencies in the United States, and more than 3,000 did not submit their crime statistics in 2020.
So what are your thoughts on that?
I am not surprised. Again, like I said, I think beefing up like our, like, I think beefing up our hate crimes reporting laws and infrastructure, let's say, is only as helpful as it allows us to identify underlying causes and eradicate them. So like, just knowing how many people, like, I guess that's helpful to like know how many people can beat the fuck up and stuff. However, like, what are we doing? What are we doing with this information other than just like, honestly, kind of fear mongering, making people afraid to like take the subway or walk home alone at night, which, you know, if they should be afraid, then that's valid. But like, what, like, other than that, what is being done with this information? Are we using it to analyze what is radicalizing people into violent extremism and changing our school curricula to foster more appreciation of diversity and inclusivity? No, we're not fucking doing any sort of shit of like an actual quantitative to like measurable results pipeline at all.
Well, I mean, I don't know that nobody's doing that, but I mean, you definitely can use that information to like kind of check the, to kind of like take like a temperature, you know what I'm saying? It's not, to me, it's not, it seems like it makes, you know, like logical 1 + 1 = 2 sense that the pandemic happened and that stupid people are like harassing and attacking Asian people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like that, like it gives you, you can use that to take the temperature that it's like, okay, there's this thing that's happening in the world, in the news, and now violence is increasing against Asian Americans.
Yes, so you can use it. You can use it in that sense. People doing that work. Yeah, I shouldn't say that no one is.
Yeah, but I mean, it's similar to how when they took, you know, it's like they took Trump off of Twitter, and quantifiably they can tell, oh, okay, there's not as much hate speech going on Twitter. like the amount of hate speech that was generated on Twitter like dropped significantly over the year that like Trump hasn't been on there. Doesn't mean he's responsible for hate speech, but it just meant what is like cause and effect, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. I think that the like hate crime numbers can be used in that sense where it's like, man, you know, if you look in the last 10 years and then all of a sudden, you know, like you get to year 5 and then the shit jumps up, you know, you got to kind of look at the factors that are going in and what's happening, what's causing those numbers to jump. Even if it's not like scientific, just to give you somewhat of a sense.
No, that's like, absolutely valid. And I do imagine there's a lot of scholars studying that kind of thing. I imagine the folks at the Southern Poverty Law Center probably study that kind of thing. I've been on briefings with like Fair Fight where they have looked at election misinformation and right-wing violent extremism targeting elected officials. Like, they are keeping track of that stuff within their organization for Georgia. And so I guess my question is, to what degree are these things, is this knowledge being taken up by actual governmental bodies? Like, is the FBI doing anything? Or are they too busy infiltrating and disrupting, like, Black liberation movements?
How would you use that information, Councilwoman?
I mean, okay, well, let's be clear. Local governments can only do so much. I mean, if I were like Chairman Parker or whatever,
I'm gonna make sure there's no racism on this block.
But governmentally, like considering restrictions on, you know, within the FCC of what sort of stuff that folks can be posting or amplifying, or since, or you know, somehow bringing the hammer down on corporations like Facebook that have significantly contributed to the amplification of right-wing violent extremism. You know, they were shown to like be funneling people into QAnon and shit like that. Where are the consequences for that? So I think efforts like that could be, I mean, like effectively promoting censorship. But I'm like, yeah, I'm not trying to get people killed out here because somebody thinks that.
I was just about to ask you your thoughts on that. So I mean, like, because we're about to get into this next group, because we're gonna go down a little rundown of some of the groups that were active in it and who's on the scene right now. But what do you feel about that? Like, in a quell in a effort to prevent right wing propaganda from spreading, like, what are your thoughts on just the argument of speech and free speech and how that's applied and censorship and deplatforming and, you know, I mean, when to do it, when not to do it, when to even talk about it or mention it. Is it fundamentally, just from a principle standpoint, a no-go for
you? So this gets into, like, what could this data be used for? Like you were saying, you took it to a different level than I had thought about before, and appreciate that. So if we consistently see rises in hate crimes, like, correlated with certain sorts of, like, let me think for a second. If we start to see a correlation between an increase in hate crimes and proliferation of certain kinds of rhetoric, hateful rhetoric against a certain group, like, oh, Trump in the news this week is talking about how Mexicans are rapists. Next week, we saw, like, 22 aggravated assaults against people who looked Hispanic or something like that. Perhaps not as cut and dry, but like when you aggregate data, you can probably see significant trends of that sort. That could then inform policy to say, all right, this is causing violence. This sort of messaging is causing violence. So we're going to crack down on it. You can't say this shit, not because we want to restrict your free speech, but literally you are inciting violence against people.
You're putting people's lives in danger
with the things that you're saying. Yeah.
I mean, if we just go back to 2015, right? Dylann Roof kills all those black people in the church, writes a manifesto, more or less, I'm MAGA, right? Mm-hmm. Charlottesville happens. Heather Heyer gets killed. Everybody there is this, you literally called the Unite the Right rally. We're all MAGA, right? Homie in the Texas church, I think it was like 2017, maybe 2018. Dude walks in, body armor, sprays everybody up. White dude, and it's a white church. He ended up being MAGA. Parkland shooting, that's a MAGA kid. Fast forward to today, around this time. Who's the kid that just, I forget where that was. God, there's so many of them. But a kid went to his school, and he shot, I think he hit a football player and a couple other kids. It just happened just like a couple weeks ago. But that kid's the one whose parents went on the run.
Mm-hmm.
You remember hearing about that?
Oh, yeah. I remember that kid, yeah.
That was a MAGA inspired incident, and then taking us back to last week, where alt-right philosopher went on a murderous rampage in Denver and killed 5 people.
Mm-hmm.
Again, being cliched, but if those are just like 5 or 6 incidences that have happened in the last 5 and 6 years, and like. For real, if even one of those things was done by Al-Qaeda, we would be invading a country right now. Not that I'm saying that's what we should be doing. You know what I'm saying? I'm not like that's not what I'm saying. But it's just like there is something alarming to me, the amount of malaise towards it. You know, I just don't see it. Just like with the January 6th thing, I think that all of these incidences are just going to keep being more frequent than they are right now, because like everything is emboldening people and people aren't being held to account for these things.
Yeah.
Like I'm not fucking with the cops and I'm not fucking with the police state, but I'm also not gonna be stupid and like let right wingers run game on me so that I don't protect myself. You know what I mean? Or so that I'm not looking out for my own best interests in the name of like some esoteric like political like theory of like, well, I mean, you know, because like I wouldn't want the police state to, it's like, nah, we don't want the police state to be used against people because we largely feel that it's used unjustly and unfairly and at the behest of the powerful.
Well, let me put it this way.
But like when people are actually acting in bad faith and like with insidious like plots trying to harm like everyone else, I'm sorry. I can't be like let it slide because.
Let me put it this way. I don't think prison is a good place for these people. That I don't think putting them in prison is going to make our community safer, because in prison, without access to your family or TV or Twitter or whatever, you're gonna join a white supremacist gang. if you weren't in one already, or if you were in one already, you're gonna like get a swastika tatted on your neck and lift, you know, do squats or whatever in the yard with the Nazis and become more hardened and really hate the state more because they've imprisoned you. So when you get out, if you get out, you're gonna be worse than when you went in there. Not that I'm saying people should be held accountable. It's just I'm adding nuance to the like the debate. Like, well, there should be accountability. No. I don't want to let this thing slide. Like, I don't want this shit slide either. I'm just worried about the further radicalization of people as a result of incarceration.
No, it's a totally fair and good point. I would just argue that in this scenario, I think it's better. Like, I really do. In this scenario, I think it's better that these guys, these people be in situations where they are getting swastikas tattooed on them, and they are, you know what I mean, joining white supremacist gang. Like the threat right now is not like a street level insurgence of, you know, like right-wing extremism. Although that is a threat. Like, that's the like, as far as in the context of what I'm talking about, that's like the Dylan Roof type stuff, or it's like the sort of attacks that I've been, like, you know, listing down, like that street level, like, oh, we're gonna do something, I'm a lone wolf, I'm gonna do something, all that stuff is gonna increase. But like the more dangerous aspect long term, like that shit is like immediately dangerous to the people who are caught up. You know what I'm saying? If you have the misfortune of being at that location when that lone wolf does that thing, that sucks. But I just mean, like, a broader, more general danger is that if these guys aren't, like, being driven to, like, those margins where it's like, oh, man, I'm in the Nazi gang, you know what I mean? Or, man, I went to jail, so I got the tattoo, the swastika on my eye and shit like that. They get to, like, they get to fucking slither into the, you know what I mean, undercover and get their thoughts not marginalized and adopt it. I mean, we have the Republican Party is wide open for this shit, and it's simply just a matter of which way they're gonna go in the next 5-10 years. They've always had all of the they've always been with the shits, with the bullshit that they've been with, but like now I think we face the threat of, if this like right wing extremist shit gets normalized even more than it already is, you're gonna have an entire political party just like outright adopt it. You know, because they haven't yet. For all of the bat shit insane as the Republicans are right now, they're led, you know, pretty much is still led by Trump world, and Trump world has no principles and no real belief system. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
there's no real ideology in Trump world. But if they start adopting this, like we're, you know, we're gonna like talk a little bit briefly, or not even, we've talked about Patriot Front before. They were the group that marched in Washington a couple weeks ago. But like, for example, that shit's comprised of fucking 20-year-olds, yo, and 18-year-olds, and you know, like in 10 years, if those guys aren't, or if those guys are like, don't face any consequences for their shit, none of them have to go to jail where it's like, oh, I'm going to get a swastika tattooed on my face. I'm just going to end up becoming a cop or a judge.
Perhaps.
Or a real estate agent.
Uh-huh.
Or a landlord.
These people are already real estate agents and cops and landlords. Like, we're not going to avoid that from happening. That's what these people already are. But I will say I don't have a clear answer for what accountability should look like for these people, because perhaps they are too far gone. I also know that when people are backed into a corner, they bite. You know, that's what we see with folks that are out here slanging meth and killing each other in my fucking neighborhood. And that is equally true of people that feel marginalized for made up reasons. But, I'm so oppressed because I'm a white real estate agent. But like, feel oppressed or marginalized ideologically, that tends to like sometimes retrench the way people already feel. But again, I don't have a clear answer for it, other than like, I think the reason why Republicans pursue austerity politics so hard is to keep alive these racial resentments and between like the white and black working classes. Like, if we pass things like a federal job guarantee, you couldn't claim anymore that Mexicans are stealing your jobs. If we did things like free higher education and a lot of these, you know, white folks that just come home from work at the auto shop every day and put on Fox News could like develop some critical thinking and maybe realize that like black people are the people, etc.
But see,
like, I think a lot of these things could, over the long term, help transform the situation that we're in. And that's the kind of thing I always advocate for. Like, there's no perfect system of accountability. I don't even know if a state is capable of developing such. But, like, ending this kind of violence is ultimately incumbent upon the state to invest in communities in a way that, like, just keep people from becoming this mentally deranged. But anyway... If we want to get into the interview, we can.
We're going to take a little break, y'all. And when we get back, we're going to have that interview that I had with Christopher Goldsmith, Nazi hunter extraordinaire. And we're going to get his thoughts on January 6th and some of the stuff that we've been talking about so far. So we will be back with that after the jump. All right, people, what is happening? We are back. All right, so we've got now a friend of the podcast. It's my homie. He's CEO of something called Spavarius, which he's going to explain to us. He's also an Iraq war vet and a Nazi hunter. I want y'all to, you know, I wish, I always say this whenever I introduce people, but like, I wish that this was live so that I could get like a crowd response. You know what I mean? But I wish everyone could make some noise for my homie, Christopher Goldsmith. What's happening, Chris? How you doing?
Hey, what's happening, brother? It's good to be kind of back.
Yeah, kind of back. Well, when I, you know, I just gave you an introduction like that, like with all of those things, what exactly, like, how would you describe yourself? Like, what do you do?
So, One of the most eye-opening classes that I ever took. You know, I joined the Army when I was 18. Went to Iraq at 19. Was out by 21 in like some really rough shape.
What year was that when you got out?
I got out in 2007.
Okay.
And I didn't start school until 2013. So it took me that long to kind of like put myself back together.
Yeah.
And I took an economics 101 course, and it was one of the most eye-opening courses in terms of like applying names and like actual theory to things that I kind of understood but like didn't have a name for. And one of those things is negative externalities. So negative externalities is like when a coal-firing power plant is operating in your town and smog is like, you know, just filling your house with all sorts of terrible stuff. That's a negative externality. Like, you are paying the cost for that power plant's operation, right? So
yeah.
Modern day laws, we tax them, right? Or we fine them for that kind of thing. Right now, the far right, you know, everything from Trump world on, they're imposing negative externalities on all of us all the time. I mean, January 6th was a traumatic event for so many of us. As a New Yorker who experienced 9/11 from, you know, 20 miles away, lost, you know, I personally didn't lose anybody, but most of my friends and family lost someone who was a direct connection. January 6th felt like that to me, right? So all of these folks have been putting their negative externalities on us, and we haven't had any way to impose any costs on them. So I created Spavarius, which is an organization that is focused on not just tracking and researching and reporting on the far right, but sabotaging. So I will do things like join a neo-Nazi organization, I'll document their internal comms, and then I'll post them online so that people understand, like, if they've got a Nazi in their neighborhood and they want to take action to make sure that their community is safe, like, I'm helping people do that.
That's awesome. So how do you, like, on the... Right now, it's Tuesday that we're talking, but when this episode's going to come out, it's going to be January 6th, the anniversary of January 6th. So... In the year that's passed since then, what have you noticed about the movement of like far right and extremist groups? Has there been any sort of rallying around that event? Obviously, there have been a couple of attempts to try and do another one, or you know, that haven't really gone so well for them. But have you noticed any sort of ratcheting up of their activity in the past year?
Yeah. So, depending on what time of day people are listening to this podcast, my guess could be wrong, but you know, my analysis of what's set to happen on January 6th is a whole lot of nothing. At least in terms of, you know, what happened a year prior. But much more significant is the fact that all of the extremists who are involved in January 6th, either they're committing violence against their fellow Americans, police officers, protecting the citadel of democracy, you know, using Blue Lives Matter flags to hit cops, right? Or if they were financial supporters, or just, you know, Fox News audience who are committed to the ideologies. They've moved their operations, instead of from being centralized and attacking the Capitol, to harassing school boards and local election officials. And, you know, this is, we have entered a new phase in our history, and we're experiencing an insurgency. You know, when I speak about these terms, when I use the term Nazi, when I use the term fascist or insurgency or terrorism, I want to be clear, I'm not using hyperbole. Like, I'm not one of those you know, talking heads who goes on TV every day and you know, screams that the sky is falling. When I talk about insurgency, I'm talking about the same stuff that I experienced when I was in Iraq, how there were armed groups who were forming in their local communities who, you know, put on their own branding saying, oh, we're here to protect the public, when in fact they were there to violate human rights of those who, you know, weren't part of their group.
Didn't have, you know, the power, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what's an insurgency? An insurgency is an organized group who's willing to use violence, not just against the government and representatives of government power, be it, you know, elected representatives or those in uniform, police or military, but they're also willing to use force, violence, threats against the American public. And that's what we saw on January 6th.
So the thing that always frustrates me is, like, you know, obviously, it's almost a cliche at this point to talk about the shift of the Overton window between now and, like, say, 30, 40 years ago. But the thing that always gets to me is, like, what worries me is, like, the stochastic terrorism aspect of things and lone wolves and people just doing isolated acts and shit like that. But it's, like, I don't even think that we're at a point where we're waiting for that sort of stuff to start happening more. But it's like every other mass shooter has some sort of links to being like a far right extremist or a Trumper, mm-hmm. or a fascist or want to be this. So it's like, I don't understand how, well, I mean, it's a rhetorical question, I guess I'm mm-hmm. asking, but it's like, it frustrates me that this hasn't like successfully stuck in a mainstream sort of way. You know what I mean? Just for example, what was it? Just last Monday, like a literal alt-righter went on a shooting spree in Denver. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody who has like a 800-page alt-right manifesto printed. Like, again, cliches, but if that was like a Black Lives Matter guy, or if that was a Nation of Islam guy, mm-hmm. it would be a much bigger deal than it is now. So how do people who like are concerned about these things, like, is there any sort of contribution that we can get because to make things like this stick in the national mind frame or in the media scape? Because I mean, for all the criticisms that we want to have of establishment media, and there's endless and infinite criticisms to go around, they can be useful in a case like this to, you know what I mean, to mm-hmm. for, they can be useful for propaganda, and we need, yeah. we successfully need propaganda against this sort of things, and stuff like attaching the many crimes and like murders that they're already doing before it reaches like a, you know, insane level, I don't understand how we're not able to make those stick.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that frustration. And, you know, so what, one of the things that motivated me into this is like, I've always wanted to serve my country, and I did in the military, it didn't work out so well. Since then, after a few years of a dark period in recovery, you know, I've been working for nonprofits, veterans nonprofits, volunteering a lot of my time, and frankly, like not making any money doing it. One of the things that led me to become a researcher of any kind was I was working at Vietnam Veterans America and found a fake version of our Facebook page, which had twice as many followers, and it was backed up by three independent websites, all with different URLs, all branded with Vietnam Veterans America, producing news and information about veterans benefits like VA home loans and healthcare and the latest on bills that would help veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange, like real true stuff. And then once in a while, they would include a piece of manipulated news. The most ingenious thing, I was impressed once I figured out, A, that this wasn't just like a rogue member of our organization trying to do a good thing and that it was malicious. I found a Facebook Live video that had been picked out a local news coverage, like a 58-second clip from rural Massachusetts, where an African-American Vietnam veterans monument, so a black Vietnam vets monument, was defaced. Now, it wasn't like somebody took a chisel and hammer to it or spray paint. It looked like some kid rubbed some like red berries on it or something. But local news, it's a story. You know, anytime that there's like a bad guy of any kind, a conflict, that's what they want to cover, right? So This was a true story where black veterans of Vietnam, right? So those are three distinct and important populations, were targeted by an unknown actor. Yeah. So what this foreign entity did was it took this 58-second video, somehow tricked Facebook's algorithm into believing that it was a live video, and looped it for 4 hours. And over the real chyron that says Black Vietnam Veterans Monument defaced, they put this meme-style text that said, "Do you think the criminals must suffer?" And then encourage people to do the heart emoji for no or the angry emoji for yes. So they're taking advantage of Facebook's algorithm on so many levels, because clicking like is one thing. Taking the extra time to click a heart or an angry emoji shows more of an investment, and Facebook's algorithm rewards that. So that entity ended up being run out of Bulgaria. The Facebook page was run out of Bulgaria. The websites were out of Russia. And I spent the following 2 years investigating all of the ways that foreign actors target troops, veterans, and our families with online. So everything from disinformation to identity theft. And the common thread through all of it was pushing veterans to extremes, especially around issues of race, refugees, immigration. And they would use these stupid slogans like veterans before refugees, or veterans versus immigrants, to divide Americans. And this, the years of research that I put into that first report for Vietnam Veterans America, today I understand it got me where I am today. But I feel like years later, I wasted my time spending so much time looking outwardly, because their goal was to radicalize Americans. They weren't solely responsible for the radicalization of Americans. But at this point, the threats coming from outside our country are not significant in comparison to domestic threats. You know, the cult of Trumpism, of QAnon, of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, that is far more dangerous than anything the Russians ever did to us.
So where do you think it's heading? Wait, before we get into that, sure. Because one of the groups that we talk about on this episode is Patriot Front, because mm-hmm. they were in the news with the march that they did recently. Are there any other groups that you think should be on people's radar, or could you tell us more about Patriot Front and what makes them in particular unique amongst the hate groups?
So Patriot Front is really the group that got me into going as far as I do in terms of like joining these hate groups and sabotaging them. It came about because of a buddy of mine who I served with in the Army who deployed in 2007, and as a sniper, he went through some really tough stuff during the troop surge into Iraq, came home. He's now medically retired. The guy is brilliant. He's, you know, built like a brick shit house, and he wants to serve his country, but Iraq broke him in ways that he will never be fixed. And he, rather than, you know, wallow in sadness, not being able to do what he wants to do, he figured out another way to serve his country. He randomly joined a hate group, called me up and said, "Hey, Goldie, I want you to help me take down this neo-Nazi group that I just joined." Like, there, that was the pitch. There was no previous discussion. I had no idea, right? So
yeah.
Fast forward a year later, I get laid off due to the COVID problem. And I call him back up and I'm like, "All right, buddy, tell me about your neo-Nazis." And that ended up being the Patriot Front. It is the Gen Z's take on the KKK. You know, people who saw the photos and videos of their march in DC saw the white gator, the like neck things that they pull up over their face. That's just the modern day Klan hood. Like, you know, we laugh at them because they look goofy. They look like they're, you know, a bunch of Best Buy managers with
white gators. But people did that with the Klan too.
Yeah. And like, well, the Klan, you know, think about how goofy a bunch of people dressed like ghosts look. Yeah. Right. And that part of that is deliberate, right? So the uniform, you know, if you're a Marine in the United States Marine Corps, you have a great looking uniform, and that uniform tells a lot of things about you. The stripes on your shoulder tell you, tell people, you know, what rank you are. The ribbons on your chest tell people your resume, like what you've done, how much combat you've seen, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the goofy Best Buy uniforms that Patriot Front are wearing, they've got Velcro on stickers that show like the locations that they're from, the rank within the organization, all sorts of stuff that they understand, but we as outsiders don't necessarily recognize, right? So they have goofy uniforms, but they're signaling to one another their, you know, allegiance to white supremacy and what they've done for the cause of advancing their racist propaganda campaigns.
Well, something I want you to dig a little deeper on, just because, you know, I think sometimes it's seducing to put racism and like hate and just all this stuff that we're generally talking about and put it in the box of, yo, this is an old man sport. Like, we're, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Hey, we're just a generation away. They're dying out, and then it's all going to be kumbaya and flowers and stuff like that. So the aspect of Patriot Front being a Gen Z sort of group and like a youth movement almost in a way. And even I noticed this online with, you know, the amount of young men who follow who Steven Crowder and Jordan Peterson and so on and so forth. So like, could you talk a little bit more about this, about it being like a Gen Z thing? Like, how are they using their Gen Z-ness to like further this really old antiquated ideology?
Yeah. So the same way that, that millennials and older generations look at Gen Z and they're like, man, when these kids grew up with the internet at their fingertips, they literally grew up with smartphones, with tablets, with, you know, not like 8-bit computer games, right? Like complex MMORPGs, like massive multiplayer online role-playing games, right?
Yeah.
They're the world that they grew up in threw so much information at them. And we don't think about the hard skill sets that come from daily life of being a Gen Zer connected to the internet. Gen Z grew up watching Kim Kardashian go from some unknown person who had a porn tape, you know, mysteriously leak to being one of the richest and most powerful people on the planet. I mean, you know, she's not a politician, but you know, she can make a brand overnight, right? Like she gets people to act. She gets people to send their money, you know, whatever way, to believe in causes. Well, so if you're a Gen Z kid and your dad's in the KKK and you're growing up with those two influences, you've got, you know, Kim Kardashian on your phone and you've got Jim Bob, your racist dad, like, you know, influencing you and teaching you your so-called values, you're going to become a really effective propagandist. You know, these kids have, you know, basically got a bachelor's degree in marketing and communications just growing up as Gen Z. Like they understand what makes an engaging photo, video, like that whole, the Patriot Front's march thing. Like we were all laughing at them, but people who are susceptible to the like whole wanting to fight for the white race because you're a racist piece of shit thing, like they love that stuff.
Yeah. So back to the question that I cut you off. Where do you think this is all heading? Because, I mean, just to give, you know, I don't think like a literal civil war is looming. Like that sounds like something in a movie or a script or something like that. And I don't even really think that they mean civil war when they talk about civil war. Like, I don't think any of these guys are daydreaming about, like, urban warfare with SWAT teams, and, like, a warehouse Matrix gun battle with, like, Navy SEALs and stuff. Like, I think they're talking about, hey, let's go into a gay youth center and shoot it up. You know what I mean? Hey, let's go into a black church and kill everyone. Like, where do you think it's heading?
So if you know, Patriot Front is able to operate completely unopposed, the Republican Party is going to adopt straight up, like, real explicit white supremacy as their party platform, you know, and like, yes, the Republican Party engages in a whole lot of that stuff, but most of it's masked and veiled. Mm-hmm. Not every member of the GOP in Congress is as much of a piece of shit as like the guy Paul Gosar in Arizona who hangs out with Nick Fuentes and goes to neo-Nazi conventions. But we're, you know, if people don't start actively opposing these folks and bringing it back to what we talked about before, imposing negative externalities or fining them or penalizing them for the negative externalities that they're bringing to the rest of society, that's the direction we're moving in. The coup attempt that we saw on January 6th didn't stop on January 6th. You know, we are seeing the rewriting of laws that are disenfranchising entire populations of voters, you know, that are making it so that we're going to live under the tyranny of the minority. And that's not like an if thing. You know, there is a very small chance that Democrats hold the House in 2022 when McCarthy becomes Speaker of the House and guys like Paul Gosar are chairing committees. They're going to be shaping laws, running investigations, harassing federal agencies to the point that they can no longer protect the people of the United States from violent domestic extremists.
So if anybody wants to help you and others in the fight against this shit, where can they go? What can they do?
So Sparvarius is partnering with Human Rights First. It's a big nonprofit organization. They are primarily concerned with the settlement of refugees, with helping vulnerable populations, immigrations, and protecting human rights at home and abroad. They created two programs. One is called Veterans for American Ideals, which was specifically made to help Iraq and Afghanistan interpreters and allies come into the United States to push for legislation, to push for administrative action, to help them get welcomed into the United States. And two is the Innovation Lab. So the Innovation Lab at Human Rights First is developing technology that is meant to protect human rights. So that means we've got a program where it can analyze hundreds of hours of YouTube videos, and it can help us without having to have a human being watch all of those, you know, shitty videos, help us understand how YouTube videos are being used to radicalize American youth or, you know, other targeted populations. We've got software that analyzes videos that's meant to detect state-sponsored violence. So things like what we saw on in Lafayette Square when Trump ran across the street after having cops clear crowds that were, you know, vast majority of completely peaceful with no warning. All of those videos we're putting into an artificial intelligence program that is helping us learn how to detect police violence so that we can use that not just here stateside, but, you know, overseas as well. So this, the cool thing about what we're doing at Human Rights First and the Innovation Lab is we're making it so that the programs that we're developed will never be used by the government. They'll never be used by a foreign government. They'll never be used by any actor who could use it to hurt vulnerable populations or to erode democracy. You know, we're going to make sure that it stays in the hands of journalists, human rights activists, researchers, and that type of thing. So if people want to support us, you know, you can check out, go to my website, sparvarius.co. You can search for me on Twitter or online, Christopher, Chris with a K, Goldsmith. I'm pretty easy to find because my name is spelled weird. And go to Human Rights First and poke around the website. Check out Veterans for American Ideals. Check out the Innovation Lab. You know, make a donation if you want to support the work directly. And we're also at Sparvarius going to be training veterans to engage in the work that I do of studying and exposing and disrupting extremist organizations.
That's what's up. Yeah. Hey, Christopher, man, thank you for talking with us.
Thanks a lot, brother.
All right. Be easy. I'll holler at you down the jump. All right.
All right, brother. Be good.
All right, and that was Christopher Goldsmith, ladies and gentlemen. So, as you guys can hear, he's out there actually doing the work and putting himself in harm's way to combat some of this stuff. Just generally, you know, like, as we wrap this up, where do you think this whole thing is heading? And by whole thing, I just mean because it's like, we're in the midst of something new, you know, like... as Christopher was saying with the Patriot Front group, is like these kids essentially have grown up in the era of like media and mass communications, and all of them technically have marketing and communications degrees just by growing up, you know what I'm saying? So all of them are expert propagandists and stuff like that. And with everything ratcheting up, where do you see it headed? Where do you think we are if we were to have a discussion about right-wing extremism in the next like 3 years from now? What do you think we're talking about?
I think even a shorter term than that, like thinking about the next 6 months, we have a very short window in which Democrats can enact bold, transformative policies that substantively invest in communities as a way to both animate the electorate to come out and support them to keep the fascists out of power. And as I was saying earlier in the show, those to have those investments also pay dividends for the people, for the like the white folks, the real estate agents, whoever, who feel disenfranchised or like ideologically marginalized right now, for them, for that sort of investment, to see that kind of good and feel that kind of good, you know, those tangible benefits in their lives, to cool down the currently very heated political climate and the ways that it gives rise to violent extremism. Like, we got, honestly, you're talking about, like, whoa, 3 years from now, like, we got 6 months to, like, really, really lock this shit down. Start putting, like, you know, material needs of working people over civility and protocol. Fire the parliamentarian. And try our best to buy ourselves more time through having a continued democratic control over that the three houses of government. That's what I see. I don't know what's gonna happen after that if we fail. I don't even know if that's going to completely solve the issue, but let's at least, like, let's put a Band-Aid on this for now by at least delivering for the American people, trying to maybe keep the House and the presidency in 2024, and, like, just stave off the utter collapse for, like, a little bit longer.
I guess I would just say is, like, I think we should all be easy on giving a lot of these cats the benefit of the doubt and shit. Or at least, I don't know. At least for me, I'm at a point in life where I think that the stakes are so high that I'm just not willing to put my life at risk by betting on some of these basic human commonalities and stuff like that. Like, I don't think that there's any right-wingers out there. If there's a right-winger out there that you can convince that Medicare for all is a good idea, they're not including me in that assessment. You know what I'm saying? If like whatever economic anxiety that these cats are feeling, I think you can find a mutual ground with them only to a certain extent, because there's like a whole like subsect of the population that they're not considering or factoring to any of that good shit. So like I don't know how real that alliances, because I don't give them the benefit of the doubt, and I think that for the most part they're lying. You know what I mean? So I don't really believe that any of this shit is comprised of economic anxiety or the liberal elites fly over us and look down and you know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of that shit is lip service, and it's the lies that people tell themselves to justify in public the things that they want to do. Yeah, that's just me. That's just me. So I would just say that we should just proceed with caution, because like fascists are very aware of what they're doing, and they're very aware of how to use rhetoric and how to like deceive. It's like, it kind of goes in the bag with being a fascist, is like deception and shit like that. So we shouldn't let our good nature help these fucks take over this shit. You know what I mean? And get their messages out. That's just my two cents. I'm going to go smoke an L.
With that,
I think Joel's going to bust a beat.
Bitch!
Oh. Dope. Yeah. Waiting on reparations. Yo, I think these kids need a therapist. Embarrass this Nazi with the help of Spivarius. They talking all that bullshit, not noticing how weird it is. Then they lose their job and they crash. It's hilarious. Couple years ago, they said the Jews would not replace it. Then they met the consequences. We was bruising guys' faces, so they had to switch their name up. Patriots to stay front. Little teenagers had to run into the same truck like that. If Trump win again, they'll be right back. Replace the police uniform with khakis and a white mask. So if you want to be a blogger, then it's fine. But I'm punching Hitler like I'm Steve Rogers in his prime, motherfucker. Hey, that was a really good one. My name's Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
And we are waiting on reparations. We didn't even tell you motherfuckers. Happy New Year, yo.
Happy New Year.
2022.
Stay safe out there. I really honestly hate telling people to stay safe when the fucking federal government has abandoned us. But do your best. You know, try your best out. A for effort, kids. Here's a participation trophy for trying to dodge the Rona. So we will see y'all next week.
I'm Dope Knife. Waiting on reparations. Y'all take it easy.
Waiting on the fifth Matrix movie that's better. Winning on Reparations is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.